broadcasting live from Sayulita, Mexico. We've got all kinds of things going on up here. It's just been an awesome trip. I've been talking to a lot of different people here in Sayulita, and they love the information, and they're actually playing it at the outdoor theater. Contact Has Begun is making its debut in Sayulita. And we've shown some of the latest footage also as well. We have a short promo that we're getting ready to put out. But it's all the latest giant triangle ships on the ground, orbs, light spheres interacting with people. It's a pretty awesome new video, and that's going to be coming out really soon. I've met so many people on this path, and I think one of the most interesting people have been the Huichol tribe or nation. And we experienced some of the healers, one by the name of Julio, who actually did some work on me. And while he was doing, you know, the ceremony, the healing ceremony, I actually saw a condor. And then when he was finished in the second round, I actually saw a jaguar right in front of my face. So I was up flying with the condors for a while, and it was quite an experience. And so I thought it would be an awesome event to have one of our experts on the Huichol tribe to come on and bring Susanna on the show. And Susanna, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, well, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, it's really fun to talk to you and to your audience.
Yeah, I read your book and about the Huichol ceremonies, and I thought it's amazing. Can anybody get that book?
Which book is it? There have been several.
Oh, there's several. Okay. Well, I just got to see one about the, I guess, all the ceremonies and the history.
The one with the many beautiful yarn paintings, those
beautiful images.
Uh-huh. That one's out of print, but keep an eye on eBay for it. It's called Huichol Indian Sacred Rituals.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and it's kind of a coffee table book, and you can see the amazing paintings that are just visions from another world.
Oh, great, and you have some other books out as well as the Huichol Center here in Sayulita, which we actually have online there. We put it up on the website and all the information, the email, and the website as well.
Oh, that's great. You know, it's huicholcenter.org, mm-hmm. and it's especially good for families because there's lots of interactive activities that kids can download for free and get to know a little bit about the language and the symbolism of the Huichol people and color their designs, the way that we can share the culture with the world.
Now, what would be the best way? I know it's very complicated, but what would you say concerning the ceremonies of the Huichol and what is their function?
That's a real good question, and it would probably take about 3 sessions to answer that. But all right. In a nutshell, the Huichol people consider themselves to be the stewards of the gods and goddesses, and they're a Nahuatl tribe, or they're part of the Uto-Aztecan language group, so they've preserved a lot of the Mesoamerican rituals that are still pretty much intact because they're from a very remote area in northern Mexico, in the Sierra Madre Occidental. Right now I'm speaking to you from the northern part of Jalisco, mm-hmm. in a little town called Huejutia, El Alto, Jalisco. And I'm just at the foothills of the Sierras, and when you go further in, where very few outsiders have really penetrated until recently, but if you go further in, it's like going back in time. With every step forward, you take a step back in time, and you discover a world that's pretty much the remnants of all the great high civilizations of Mesoamerica wrapped into one and kind of frozen in time in a Grand Canyon-like environment. It's not the Grand Canyon. It's the Sierra Madre. And a lot of people might recognize that mountain range because the Tarahumara people live there, north of where the Huichol people are located. It's in that same Copper Canyon area, but south of that. And the Tarahumara are also Uto-Aztecan speakers, so they share a similar dialect and also a lot of traditions. But more than any other tribe in the modern world, or at least in the Americas, the Huichol people have kept their pulse or kept their umbilical cord to the native Mesoamerican aboriginal people on this Western Hemisphere. So their ceremonies are remnants of that, and as stewards of the gods and goddesses, they're still keeping the fires lit and making sure that night turns into day and day turns into night, and that the corn is planted and nurtured and the rain clouds come over and nourish the corn children. And as stewards of nature, they're making sure that they keep the cycles of nature going, and that, I would say, is one of their main purposes in life and what all their shamanistic practices revolve around. So is that in a nutshell?
Yeah, that was an excellent explanation.
An excellent little nugget.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I noticed that, and, you know, in reading about it, about the some of the ceremonies that, you know, they have all kinds of different, you know, they have the sun god and the rain god and kind of cover all the elements there and have a practice of working with, you know, the different, you know, some people call them elementals. Everybody has a different name for them. But I was reading the literature on that or the book, I found it fascinating because I've had some of these experiences myself, and not even being raised in that culture, you know, I've seen these little corn spirits, and I've seen a lot of these other animal spirits, and I can't.
Well, the jaguar and condor just appeared to you during a wheat soul cleansing, so.
Yeah.
I think you were a wheat soul in another life, my friend.
I must have been. I don't know, because I thought it was so vivid. I was up flying with the condors, and
indeed. And with father's son.
Yeah, and the gentleman that was working my Julio was his name, was he said, he's funny because he said, I was working with the condor because you needed some purification and cleansing on my intestines and things, and he was taking the feathers and the rattle and doing everything, and sucking the poison out and everything, and while he was doing that, I was up flying with the condors. And
wow.
And he said, well, the condors...
I'm glad he got all the poison out of you.
he said the condors will eat anything. You know, they're the ones that eat, clean up the mess, you know. And he said that's why they use them.
That's really powerful.
Yeah,
the Huichol people have like a system of hieroglyphs, not as formal as the Mayan further south in the Yucatan, but definitely a whole encyclopedia of symbols that contain the condors, among other things, but... There, as you mentioned, father, son, and there's Eagle Mother of the Skies, and she's in charge of the celestial realm, and then there's the Earth Mother, Takuti Nakawe, who's in the underworld, but she's the grandmother growth and puts forth the seeds when they're planted and talks with the rain mothers. So in addition to the sun god and the male sort of deities, well, as a woman anthropologist living in the tribe since the 70s, you didn't mention that I have quite a remarkable history with the Huichol people.
Yeah, well, why don't you go ahead and tell us about that history?
Oh, well, I will.
Okay.
well, I just wanted to finish, though, about the symbol. But it is remarkable, and it all comes from their relationship to the plant world, particularly the visionary peyote cactus. So that's where that all stems from. But anyway... in 1975, I was a grad student at UCLA and watched an ethnographic film about a little tribe that makes it a sacred journey every year on the mystical path to the Peyote Desert, and that they made incredible artwork, the beautiful yarn paintings that are all these vivid colors and shape-shifting creatures that morph into other spirits and vivid colors and mandalas. So I thought, I want to study these people. I was studying ethnobotany and anthropology and saw this film, and the name of the film was To Find Our Life. It was by anthropologist Peter First, very famous Huichol scholar, Dr. Peter First. He's in his 90s now, but has worked since the 60s with the Huichol people. Well, that was his film, and so the peyote seekers go searching for their lives, and I was this anthropology student at UCLA. Upperclassman was Carlos Castaneda.
Uh-huh.
And so there was a lot of that buzz going around a lot of shape-shifting in the corridors of Bruin Hall, you know, or whatever those buildings are. And so as someone really interested in ethnobotany, I thought, wow, I felt like an archaeologist or a paleontologist stumbling on a live dinosaur egg or something. Wow, you know, a tribe that uses hallucinogens and does this incredible artwork to encode the knowledge. So I really wanted to find out about them. And in 1975, when all my classmates were listening to Led Zeppelin and reading the teachings of Don Juan, I set out as a female, 24-year-old female anthropologist, setting foot where no woman has gone before, no Western woman has gone before. And a few years later, I decided that I wasn't going to be just one of these anthropologists who goes in for a couple of years. I thought, you know, I really need a 5-year commitment to get a deeper knowledge of these folks. And I was very, very interested in studying the yarn paintings, those things I referred to, the beautiful, wondrous works of art that are created by pressing yarn into wax, beeswax, and pine resin, and they depict the hieroglyphs I was talking about before. So I was really interested in studying yarn painting, and got to meet a lot of different yarn painters, although they are a kind of a guild of master artists in the culture. Not too many Huichol people actually do yarn painting, but I met a few of them and started interviewing, and well, let's just say I married the yarn painter. So.
Yeah, I've seen some of his art, and it's pretty awesome.
It is, and, you know, 33 years later, it's just even more. It takes you one level deeper into the Huichol psyche and their amazing psychedelic peyote universe.
Now, what are some of the experiences that you'd have, you know, like going in on the paranormal side, you might say, just out of curiosity. But I'm always fascinated by you know, things that go bump in the night and these other manifestations that seem to happen.
There's lots of things that go bump in the night there.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
What were you saying after bump in the night you were interested in?
Well, you know, any kind of paranormal manifestations that seem to come with the culture, some of your experiences there.
Oh, well, there are many on personal levels and on community levels. You know, after you've been with the culture this long, you really get to hear and know about all the things that are going around. And since so high a percentage of the people in the culture have a huge degree of shamanic knowledge, it's sort of like everybody lives in multi-dimensions, you know, simultaneously, whereas in our world we kind of jump across every now and then, but and kind of go fishing on the other side of other dimensions. We dabble in it because our culture doesn't give us the wherewithal to explore to further dimensions. But in the Huichol culture, their ancestors set out a way for them to really uncover the pearl within the oyster of medical, metaphysical, and esoteric knowledge. And they follow a shamanic path so lots of supernatural and things that go bump in the night transcend there, a lot of them. You know, the thing is, as an outsider, it's really hard to get them to talk about these things openly because their gods and goddesses can punish them for revealing the knowledge, and their fellow Huichol people, hexers and sorcerers, and there's that side, too, to Huichol magical religious beliefs. And so people are careful about what they reveal, especially why should they tell a complete stranger their most intimate and secretive knowledge? And even Huichol people themselves, you know, who might be living in the same community, there's so many different levels of these supernatural and transcendental experiences, and there's different visionary plants that are used as a part of their process of accessing this knowledge and these types of interdimensional travel. They, you know, they go into hyperspace through their the use of their peyote and other plants that are very undocumented by the outside world, that are very much a part of the esoteric knowledge and the supernatural experiences. So, well, there was a time when there was, I would call it an epidemic at the school, at several schools. The government has recently put into schools as the culture's being, I call it the modern-day conquest from the outside world, that everything's changing in the last 30 years. Anyway, the government has schools, and instead of the kids going to their ceremonies and learning the Huichol ways as their ancestors taught them, and how every year they do the ceremonies and put so much of themselves into making sure all the rituals and procedures are followed. And the schools don't let the kids do that. You know, when it's time for a ceremony, the kids will say, well, I can't go, Mom. I have homework, or I have to wash my uniform. And gets there, the shaman sits behind his drum waiting for the children to turn up every year so he can revive their spirits and increase their life and life force. And they're supposed to go to the ceremonies and don't. And so the school is literally kind of built on top of ceremonial grounds, just like, you know, in ancient Mexico, the Spanish conqueror built the Temple of the Virgin over the sacred grounds. But the spirits still run really strong there. And for 4 years, there was all sorts of extreme behavior being demonstrated by all ages of the kids at the boarding schools, at the different boarding schools there. And they would have super strength. It would take three adults to hold a 10-year-old kid down, and they would run and jump and howl like wolves and talk in a different language to each other, and they understood the language, and there's all sorts of telepathic stuff going on with them, but they were scared. They'd go into trance. It was like a mass collective trance. And it was just crazy for 4 years, and finally they got all these shamans together to try and figure out what was the reason for that. And it turns out that one of the main schools was right over where a sacred water hole used to be, and you know, just casually forgotten about. And we told people they can't forget about that stuff, because their birthright and their purpose in life, they say, is to be caretakers of the gods and goddesses and keep the cycles going. So they can't slack off on the job. And I guess the children were being affected by that. So witnessing that kind of insanity and craziness, you know, kids would talk about the wolves that came into the rooms at night and scared them. And, you know, what was all this super strength about? And sometimes their mothers would touch them and they would feel like they had electric currents running through them. I swear it was like reading a Tony Hillerman novel or something. So how is that for?
That's pretty interesting.
Or, well, you know, there are several. There's more, but
yeah. Have you? If you don't feel comfortable about talking about any of this, I feel, you know, there's no problem with that. We've had these strange things happen because we live on a vortex. And the same thing. It's a very high energy place, and we have these mysterious cats appearing, and they look like almost like a black jaguar, or they're way too big for a house cat, and and they're probably maybe twice as big. They're not quite as big as a mountain lion, but they're twice as big as a regular house cat, and they just keep appearing and disappearing, and that seems to be a common thing with vortexes, and we have everything from Bigfoot walking around the ranch to UFOs landing to, I mean, it's just, you know, you have to get into that space where you observe these things and you just go, well, that's interesting, you know.
Well, that is really interesting.
Yeah, or
that
you'd go
really
nuts,
is.
You know, if you tried to figure all this out.
Well, I think it's interesting that some people are so much more attuned to those things than others.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you're a coast-to-coast listener, right?
Oh, but, yeah, I've been on there several times.
Yeah, I'm a dedicated listener. Well, one of my favorite guests on there is Michio Kaku.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, I'm sure you've heard him, but Japanese physicist, so he's got such a handle on things, string theory and all of that. But he says that there's different grades of civilization, like we're type 0 or type 1, and as you get more attuned to the other dimensions, your civilization evolves and, you know, gets us all going more to where we're going in the future. But he said it's like we're little ants living next to a superhighway as far as the intelligences of the universe go, you know. The superhighway is like type 4 civilization. What do they care about us? But, you know, maybe some of the ants are looking up and saying, oh, what's that? You know, and that's what I think is happening with you. You're more in tune with that dimension of of experiences and open to that. The psychedelic plants allow you to break down the barriers, too, and the boundaries and all sorts of things open up to you. So I'm sure they've probably had some sightings also. They don't see the black cats. They see people transforming into wolves. That's a very interesting part of the archaic knowledge that has really miraculously survived into modern times at a time when so much is being erased and so much is being lost in modern times. But they still have a very active wolf cult, and it entails people transforming more into wolves, where if you're walking down the path in the forest and you come across one of these, you won't see a person, you will see a wolf. That's what they say. And the person who transforms into the wolf, they look at their paws, they look at their hands and their paws and instead of hands, and they're walking, you know, crouched over on all fours. And like from the shaman's perspective, that's how they're feeling. But if the weechul is walking down the road and one of these wolves, one of these shapeshifters appears, that's what they'll see. So that's real interesting, because I think that's called lycanthropy. That's the academic term for, you know, werewolfism. But these weechuls, they don't go after people. They go to hunt the deer. They because the weechul believe that their original ancestors who taught them to hunt the deer were the wolves. And the wolves were the first hunters, and they got the deer and ate the deer, and peyote was the heart of the deer. So when they were consuming the deer, who kind of gave his life so that humanity could evolve and not be shapeshifters anymore but turn into the human race, the deer gave his life. He allowed himself to be hunted by the primordial wolves, and he was hunted and eaten, but his heart was a peyote cactus, and that gave the people knowledge, the knowledge they needed to do ceremonies and go and harvest the peyote in Wirikuta, their sacred land where they get the peyote, and do ceremonies all year round to honor the rain mothers, to call the rain, water the new corn children, and so.
You know, I saw one day I was walking out to my chicken coop, and I looked across the field, and there was the biggest coyote I've ever seen. It was twice as big as a regular coyote. And it was walking towards me, and it had no fear whatsoever. And it walked right up, I mean, pretty close to me, and just sat there staring at me. And we kind of just sat there staring at each other for a while, and it walked very deliberate, not like most coyotes would walk. It was, you know, very nobly, you might say. And we just sat there staring at each other for a while, and then it just sauntered off. And it just, you know, when you have those experiences, I've been out in the woods a lot, and I see a lot of coyotes and I've seen wolves out there and just about everything else. And this just didn't, there was just something not right about that situation. And I kept going, who's in there? Okay, who's coming to visit here, you know? And I was wondering if it was one of the Native American elders coming down or one of the shapeshifters or something, you know, but it just didn't seem right at all.
Well, it's good that you have no fear when these things appear to you, and maybe that's why they do appear to you, because you don't have fear of them. And other people are so scared if they saw Bigfoot or UFO, you know.
Oh, yeah.
They'd hightail it out, but I think it takes a lot of courage to open yourself to experience these other dimensions that are piled right up on this one like a layer cake.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I grab my camera and I run out as soon as I can, you know, get my hands on a camera or something, I grab it and run out. Even when we have the black helicopters buzzing us and trying to get us to stop talking about UFOs, you know, I grab my camera and I run out, and they see me run out with my camera filming them, and they just get out of Dodge because they don't want to be seen.
I wonder why they don't want they. Who's the they anyway? Who are they?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, why would anybody want to suppress that information? But I sometimes think it's those they who don't feel it's appropriate for people to experience the message of the plants, which is so much a part of the Native American and Aboriginal and first inhabitants of our land. You know, I think nature set it up that people and plants communicate with one another. Terrence McKenna calls it interspecies communication. I love that word. Those words. But who are those they? And, you know, why can't we learn about other realms of consciousness? Why can't we? Why is that a crime? And, I mean, you know, I live in Mexico, so I'm aware of all this drug cartel and stuff. It's like, who's behind all of this ridiculousness? You know, these are plants, and we're supposed to have symbiotic relationships with plants.
Yeah.
We can see the symbiosis between the human and the corn plant. If you plant an ear of corn, you know, with all the little grains attached, it's not going to grow. Humans and plants have symbiotic relationships.
Mm-hmm.
The human being picks the kernels off, plants them in the earth, prays over them, nourishes them, asks the creators to send what they need to get us through harvest.
Mm-hmm.
And in turn, that plant will nurture you and your family. And in turn, you will take those corn seeds and those bean seeds and squash seeds and wherever you go, even if it's into the next dimension, you know, you'll take these plants with you and diffuse them wherever you go. They become symbiotic with people. And the hallucinogens have a symbiotic relationship with humans, as I've been able to observe and discover all these decades with the wheat tolls. So, what gives? You know, who are the theys with the black helicopters? And
I kind of know who they are, and I've gotten into the mindset of some of these people, and it's quite interesting. It's like they really don't want people to make their own personal connection with Creator or Spirit or whatever, because an enlightened being is very hard to control. So you know, anybody that's exploring outside the box, they just want to maintain social consciousness and, you know, keep everybody good consumers, you know, and buying all that plastic crap. And so,
well, I think, yeah, so.
Yeah, if anybody sees through the dream, you know, that false dream, they're kind of a threat. So this they group, and there's many aspects to it, seem to be threatened by, you know, anybody that's kind of waking up and smelling the coffee and seeing what, you know.
Well, that's why indigenous people are so important in their message, especially, you know, people like the Wheatol.
Mm-hmm.
Because they dream the dream. Their culture has given them these dreams, like, you know, the Australian Aborigines also. They are part of the dream times, and they're dreaming new dreams. They're dreaming dreams that Western civilization is just now yawning and waking up to, you know. Oh, that's what it means to be sustainable and have a sustainable community. And, oh, that's what it means to have our symbiotic relationships of reciprocity with the plant kingdom and the animal kingdom and the knowledge of the other realm. That's why it's so important, and what I've dedicated my life. It's not just that I married into the tribe. It's like I've dedicated my whole life to the rescue and conservation of the traditional knowledge and the bearers of this traditional knowledge. And what I'm doing is building bridges between this ancient culture and the modern world, and trying to keep this relationship of reciprocity going on planet Earth. All human cultures.
And definitely a noble cause. And I know there's a lot of us that would like to support that cause. I was really hoping, you know, not to get into the higher technology end of things, but hopefully one of these days maybe the Wheatol Center can get a little PayPal button on there and people could donate to that cause. Like, I know there's a lot of shamans that are all gathering together for sacred ceremony, I guess, to help balance the earth and pray for the earth. And are you aware of that coming up real soon, I believe?
No, but I think that's really good that the shamans and the elders and the grandmas have to come together in this day and age.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm 57. I started working with the Weepos when I was 24, and I'm a grandma.
Oh, great.
And it's the grandmas have to come together with the shamans, and,
mm-hmm.
and if we're talking about the balance, you know what's been so out of balance is the female input into the whole magical religious representation of ethnographers of the culture, you know, the way that
mm-hmm.
so many times the culture is only studied by male anthropologists, and they can't penetrate into, you know, what the gossip is when you're washing clothes at the stream or bouncing the babies on the knee. And when you really penetrate into that, the grandmother wisdom
uh-huh.
is so strong. Well, it's equal. It's at least equal. You know, sometimes I think that the whole meaning and purpose in Weecho life is to exalt their corn mother, the
uh-huh.
corn mother who's at the same time corn mother and corn child.
Uh-huh.
And so that puts a different shift on things, a different look at things. So when the shamans come together, the grandmas have to come together too.
I agree 100%. I mean, the whole shift right now, we are moving into a more feminine energy, and it's coming in gangbusters to shift, you know, and kind of get rid of this old patriarchal, you know, left brain program and get people back into the heart. And what better people to lead that than the grandmothers?
Than the grandmothers, because in the Weecho culture, in this Aboriginal Native culture, which has up until a few years ago remained, you know, so intact, they've kept this knowledge going.
Yeah, I've always found, you know, even with my center up there, you know, the one thing we really need up there is a grandmother. I keep telling people, I don't want to be solving everybody's problems, you know. We need a wise old grandmother that people can go talk to, and I really think we should have a grandmother as president, you know, in the United States, because we wouldn't have all these lame wars we're doing, you know, and things like that. We have these patriarchal nutcases up there, you know, all just going on ego. And, you know, we need a wise old grandmother to just put everybody in their place.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the women are the weavers of the culture. They're not just the ones who are carrying the water gourds from the stream or grinding the corn. They're the bearers of, they're the sweepers of the sacred broom, you know. They sweep
mm-hmm.
the patio so father and son can have a beautiful world to look on every morning. And
you know,
the weavers of culture, and
oh, yeah.
they are the keepers of the patterns, and, you know, they stitch them onto their clothing. And so I think that's important. Well, you know, I love the fact that we're able to talk, you know, me being in this remote corner of the world at the
mm-hmm.
Weecho Center. And anytime you want to call me down here, we can chat about things. Don't you just love this technology?
Yeah, you know, it can be used for some good.
How it brings the world together.
You know, I got a story you'll probably love, but we've had contact with the Palladians and some other beings, and the first contacts are almost always women, because people don't get so defensive, you know, when a beautiful woman filled with love, you know, appears to you. You don't go into that defensive mode. But I was talking to them, I found something really interesting is most of their pilots are actually women. And I asked them why, and they said because they are much, much more sensitive, and the ships are very sensitive, and they're alive. And so their response time, everything else is faster, they're more sensitive, so they make the best pilots. And I thought about that when they were telling me that, and I said, well, maybe we should think about the Earth as a big ship and put the women back in charge, and because they're more sensitive and they can get the messages from Spirit, and maybe the men should be listening to them and assisting them putting it into action, you know, with the information, and then this whole planet would be probably going in a lot better direction than it is now.
Well, that's really true. You know, the women are the empaths, and they pick up on that energy. I love how they think of the ship as a living being because, you know, everything, when you go into those hyperspace and other dimensions, you learn that everything is alive. And I love how they're thinking of their technology as living beings because I think that's where the direction humanity is going to.
That's what they're saying. They said you can only take metal so far. You can't get into some of the higher dimensions without, you know, things being organic and a living entity.
Well, you know, we told people in so many of the other Native tribes in North America and, of course, in South America and Mexico, I just saw something weird go across my window. I wonder if it has any... What are you doing to me?
That usually happens, unfortunately. A lot of times we're talking to people and the ship starts...
I lost my train of thought.
Probably have some visitors there. Who knows?
I was saying about the women being empaths.
Yeah.
Right? Uh-huh. Yeah.
Now, have you had any experiences down there? Or have they relayed any sightings or contact down in your area?
Well, the dog star, they have Venus is the dog star. They share that with the Dogon culture.
Mm-hmm.
But no, about the Pleiadians, no. But, you know, who knows what's appearing to the Huichol peoples, and they're calling them gods and goddesses or ancestor spirits. They are so convinced of their worldview and their magical religious beliefs, you know, their contact with the metaphysical realm. They always compare it to talking on the telephone or sending a fax or, you know, they're sending out messages to the cardinal points, to the four cardinal points in the center, and they get answers back.
Yeah.
And you're never going to convince the Huichol that it's their imagination. So, well, maybe they're attributing their messages to their gods and goddesses, but they're actually having contact on many levels with extra-dimensional or, you know, beings from the Pleiades. So tell me a little bit more about what's going on with your contacts.
Well, they're saying, you know, they talk a lot about heaven coming to earth, and they say we are going to go through this huge shift. But basically they said that there's going to be a lot of change before that happens. And you know, they're saying it's time to lovingly and joyously prepare and get ready because even the scientists now are saying the same thing. They're saying, according to all the geological records and the Egyptian calendar, the Mayan calendar, the Aztec, and all the different calendars, they're all pointing to this time. And the sun cycles and the Earth's magnetic field has massive holes in it right now, and the heliosphere is collapsing. So they said when that kicks on again in the beginning of this next solar cycle, what the scientists are saying, that we're, you know, we're probably going to lose the grid, you know, and anything with a chip in it, you know, due to this next cycle we're in. So, you know, they're saying to expect some really severe weather, and the poles will finish their melt-off process, and we might get a little wobble action going. So kind of be aware of the coast.
Wow. Gee.
I know, it's kind of a mouthful, but...
Gee, and I just rented a house by the beach. Well,
yeah.
I think I'm going to enjoy it while I can, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think that's why... We need to be connecting with the Gaia mind, and maybe we can have, you know, so many times they've been on Coast to Coast, how they have these mass mind experiments.
Exactly.
They did one with you one time, didn't they?
Yes, they did. We did an intention experiment to initiate contact, and they had so many people calling in and emailing them that it crashed their systems. They couldn't even handle the response, and Art said it was one of the biggest successes he's ever had because people were calling in everywhere around the world and having ships appear over their house and shooting out plasma beams, and it was quite a show.
Well, that just shows you the power of mass mind.
Yeah, you get 15 million people playing, you know, focusing on that, and definitely we can turn this planet around.
I think that's the lesson, and we have to lose our fear and listen to the plants and listen to the grandmothers and tap into the Gaian mind, the mind behind nature, because that information is there for us to access.
Oh, yeah.
We're afraid to access it. Our culture is run by fear mongers and black helicopters.
Exactly.
When the plants are sitting right out there all the time smiling at us and saying, hey, you know, let's do this ritual. Let's take these proper steps. We're not into this to have a good time, you know. Well, you can have a wonderful time exploring other dimensions, of course, but let's take these plants and learn their lessons and open up those doors, doors of perception, as I'll just hopefully call them, and take the helm of our spaceship back and steer it in the direction where it needs to go if we're ever going to become a class one or a class two or anything other than little ants by the highway, you know.
And you know, some of these ships are massive enough, they could actually put shields up and do all kinds of things for us if we start getting our act together, you know, they'll step in and help us out, but we need to get a mass movement in that direction.
Yeah, the mass mind has to merge on this, and there's so much power in that. I think that the mass mind got behind the political scene in the United States, you know, electing our new president. Absolutely. So many people have so much faith in this one person. I think it's just so wonderful that we have this new leader that we can all just get behind and support as much as we can and put our highest hopes and expectation and use our mass mind to use this huge figure and not only the president but his beautiful wife, Michelle, who's such a role model for femininity again.
Yeah.
How wonderful this is, you know.
Well, I think that people need to really rise up and get behind all these shifts, you know, and demand them and stop giving their power away to all these, you know, these other programs, and then the leaders will follow.
Well, it's just I think that people like you who, as I say, are so fearless, and we admire so much for your courage and making, you know, being the interface between the human species and so many things that are here with us all the time and most of us are just sleeping or not aware of. But I think that, you know, you are the crest of the wave and you know, somebody's got to shake us all and wake us up. And I believe that can happen. And that's part of my work with the We Told People is being that kind of bridge between Western culture and a very well-rooted existence within the esoteric worldview of the We Told People, where I'm a serious investigator, documenter of their culture, and I think I've got more information documented than any other has worked with the We Told People. But my favorite expression from Margaret Mead is, the way to do field work is never to come up for air until it's all over. So I'm not coming up for air yet.
Unfortunately, we ran out of time, and we'll have to maybe get you back on the show again sometime to talk a little more about this.
Yeah, sure. Call me anytime.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. We've got to sign off, and we've got your website up there, and everybody can reach you and see how they can help.